This is Jaguars Reporters.
Jaguars Reporters Reporting.
Presented by Burger King. Join Jaguars.com senior writer John Osher and peer of the realm we call Game Day, Cole Pepper, as they break down the last Jaguars game and look ahead to the next time the Jaguars take the field.
Why would I listen to anybody else?
Jaguars Reporters is brought to you by Burger King, American Express, Baptist Health, Wells Fargo, Ticket Exchange, Sonny's Real Pit Barbecue, and by Everbank. Jaguars Reporters begins right now.
And we welcome you in to the comeback off the ledge version of Jaguars Reporters, presented by Burger King, here on a Tuesday evening. Cole Pepper, John Osher, and I have to tell you, I got away a little bit this week.
Good for you.
You know, after everything, Sunday was a difficult game, bad performance by the Jaguars almost all the way around. And so I took a quick semi-business-related trip down to Orlando yesterday afternoon, came back this afternoon.
You went to Epcot.
You know, sometimes you just need a little pick-me-up. Wet and Wild was a great place
to
go
Mickey.
Today. And I will tell you that having that, whatever that is, two and a half hour drive down and back, kind of gives you some time to think. You know, you get to process some things, and getting away from sort of the hum and the buzz of everything that goes on around the stadium and around the city after a game like that, I think it was good for me personally.
I'm glad to hear that, Cole.
And maybe, since I know you've been plugged into the ozone pretty much directly here, maybe this 60-minute excursion into radio broadcast excellence will help you, and maybe the listeners too, kind of exhale a little bit and get set to move on. I think you said...
Yeah, I'm sensing if we take callers, I won't be exhaling a whole lot.
You might not, and we will take callers. We're not afraid. Well, I'm not afraid. I don't know about you, but we'll take calls at
355-NFL1,
including change. Thank you, Garth. And so, listen, but I have some things that I do want to kind of put in perspective, not to say that game was good, but to kind of put the bigger thing in perspective here. And some you may agree with, some you may not, but we'll see how things go. You can also, of course, interact with us via Twitter. You can tweet to either myself or to John, at Cole Pepper, at John Osher, and also online at... the Jaguars Facebook page, facebook.com/JacksonvilleJaguars. But, hey, let's start things off right here, as we love to, with Joe Fortunato now at the controls.
And now, three burning questions.
And our three burning questions, as presented by Joe Fortunato.
Burn me, Joe. Burn me.
All right, question one.
That can happen.
How much of a factor are injuries for the Jaguars right now?
I almost hesitate to answer because I know fans are worn out talking about injuries, and you know, I'm worn out writing about them. The team's worn out talking about them. You know, it's not everything. There are certainly things that could be better even despite the injuries. But, you know, the one thing that is a constant in the NFL is injuries do matter once they get to a certain level. And I think on the offensive line, when you lose five players, lose a lot of your depth, you know, that's when they become an issue. And it's hard to overcome. I've always thought you should be able to overcome one injury at a position.
In other words, one left guard.
Well, you know, one offensive lineman, then move them around.
Okay.
Yeah. Or, you know, and, you know, I think that's what is a little bothersome about Daryl Smith being out to some people. That's made a huge difference. You know, you would like that area overall as a group to be performing better than it is. But on the offensive line, I think you have to accept that injuries are a huge factor in what's gone on, and the absence of Daryl Smith and Derek Cox is, I think, bigger than many people thought it would be.
All right, on a scale of 10, if 10 is all the reasons for why the Jaguars played so poorly on Sunday, 4 of those 10 reasons, I think, are injuries.
Because it kind of builds on itself.
Yeah,
is what you're right.
And so, yes, they are a factor. Maybe it gets better as a result. But and we'll talk about this a little bit later on. I don't. Again, everybody, and this is the way it is, particularly early in a season in the NFL. But really, all the time, they look at the last game, and that must be exactly
sure.
The accurate depiction of where things are for every team. Whatever they did, you know, what have you done for me lately? But so I think it's a 4 out of 10 as far as the injuries are concerned. But I don't think it's the only reason by a long shot for what happened.
Well, I think a big thing that happened with the injuries was, you know, and it sort of built upon itself, and you would like them to be able to recover better from this. But, you know, you have the injuries on the offensive line. That forces you have to get the ball out a little quicker, and the receivers needed to do a better job of getting open a little quicker. I think the receivers did not have a good game and as a group, and that needs to be addressed.
You know, I was reading Jaguars.com yesterday and checking out the ozone upon my return from Orlando. And why did you just cha-ching Orlando?
Well, you said Jaguars.com and the ozone.
I thought you had cha-chinged Orlando.
I like Orlando.
Yeah, okay, very well.
How come it is you cha-ching Joe and I never see any extra cash off that?
I get all the cash.
Each cha-ching has a handling fee associated with it. But and somebody had written in about that, and you know, talking about why isn't there better depth for the Jaguars on the offensive line, and just seeing the names listed out all there in teal right in a row, It stands out. John Estes, Will Rackley, Jason Spitz, Cameron Bradfield, Eben Britton. That's an offensive line in and of itself, and the Jaguars are missing an entire offensive line's worth of players.
And I think the thing you have to remember is, yeah, some of those guys went on IR and got injured in the preseason, but I don't think it's ridiculous to think that every one of those five is on the team if they're healthy.
Yeah.
So you only keep eight.
And
so
maybe two or three of them are starting. So
right. So, I mean, and I get that people don't really believe yet that maybe Estes and a Spitz are frontline guys, but a Spitz was signed to be the depth. When he was signed last year, he was supposed to be that swing guy. He was a veteran guy. I don't think anybody envisioned him in Canton, but you envisioned him being that guy who would give you depth in a pinch. Mm-hmm. Rackley, you know, is either a starter or the top backup in an ideal situation. Estes, this team likes as a center of the future, and certainly his presence would have enabled Mike Brewster to be able to not be the swing guy the other day and start. So things add up. And, again, I get that people are sick of talking about injuries, and so are we, but it does play a role in matchups, and matchups cause things to landslide sometimes.
All right. Since we're sick of talking about injuries, let's move on to question number two.
All right. Who are the Jaguars, the team we saw against Minnesota or the team we saw against the Texans?
Yes. Yes is the answer. And with young teams, the hallmark of young teams are inconsistency, and the hallmark of teams with new systems is inconsistency, particularly early on until things settle in. So this is sort of a split personality situation. Now, do I expect to see a Jaguars offense put up 117 yards again this year? No. I think that was an aberration. I think it was a matchup against a team that, hey, listen, the Texans are a better team. I don't think anybody would doubt that. This is a Super Bowl contending team in the Texans. But the Jaguars also looked very good against Minnesota. So because if you can say we only have two games to look at. But, John, if you take this whole thing and look at what's happened from these first two games and the preseason games, there was no indication, other than the tackling issues that have sort of been an issue, there was no indication that the Jaguars had it in them to play like they did, particularly offensively, on Sunday. And so, again, preseason is preseason, but if we're looking at evidence of what's happening, there's no reason to think that that's the start of something else. Even though the injuries obviously impact us.
And I think it's a fair assessment. Fans, you know, write in and say this is not a deep, deep team. And, you know, I think right now depth in spots is hurting at times, but I think it's really deep on the offensive line. I have trouble being very critical of the depth on the offensive line situation. And, you know, I think Guy Whimper could be playing better as the backup tackle, but I also kind of believe that in an ideal situation, you'd have had Britton be able to move over there, and he's hurt. So you've got a lot of the pieces that they might have been able to use to make that better the other day who aren't available. And, again, we're back to injuries because it's so overwhelming, but it's part of it.
For the second, you know, last year the Jaguars led the league in IR. This year they're leading the league in IR here early on, and that's not a category you want to lead.
Last question. Sunday in Indy, is this a must-win game?
Well, I think it's must-win if you think you're going to get back in this and be, you know, 500 in October. I mean, it's never a must-win because so many weird things happen in the NFL. You can get hot. I believe this offense is – I've said since April this offense was going to be a lot better in the second half of the season than it is in the first. So in that sense, I'm not shocked that there was a struggle game against a good defense the other day. But I think realistically, if you fall to 0-3, you know, you've got a tough hole to climb out of.
I think it's
any team.
I think it's a must-win game for if you want to win the division. And now,
sure.
Again, I don't think anybody really is picking the Jaguars to win the division, so I don't. So it's only a must-win, you know, in that scenario.
Right.
I'll tell you what I think is more important, John.
What's that?
Is not just – I'm glad you asked. Right. Is not just how they play in that game on Sunday. Yes, that's important. But also is the work they put in this week and what they do this week in preparation, how they respond. You know, we talked last week about how they respond from that game, and sometimes that's overblown. It was a tough loss, and it was disappointing. I think this is a bigger thing for them to overcome. And I, one of the things I think, because there were missed tackles, there were guys, you know, running wrong routes, and I'm reading between the lines on some of the things Mike Mularkey said after the game on Sunday. The guys they didn't do the things they were supposed to do in the scripted plays in the first 15 plays. I think this is a week where personal accountability gets really driven in, and that when that happens, 90% of the time that comes from the leaders on the team and the veteran leaders in the locker room. I think this is a big week for veteran leadership on this team.
Yeah, there was a very, I don't want to say somber, but very serious, you know, there were discussions going on among the players on Monday while we were in the locker room, guys kind of talking amongst themselves. You know, when we talked to them, you know, Rasheen Mathis, Uche Nunnery, Brad Meester, I think these guys know that, look, we sent some good things out of preseason. We believed in what we're doing. And if we're going to fulfill those things, now is the time. This can't wait. Rasheen, I thought, said it best when he said, you know, the bottom line is we can be doing as good a work as we want to, and we can say these things. We can't be saying these same things on Monday. And it's sort of obvious, but it was very well put. They can't be having the same theme on Monday.
All right, we'll take time out. When we come back, we'll hear from the general manager, Gene Smith, what you don't know from Sunday's game. Also, your calls and tweets and Facebook interactions as well. 800-355-NFL1, 355-6351. Fans, nobody helps you get ready for game day better than Gate. Snacks, food, drinks, and more stop by Gate today. More Jaguars reporters presented by Burger King right after this timeout here on Jaguars Radio. Welcome back. Jaguars Reporters presented by Burger King. Cole Pepper, John Osher here. You can join the conversation 800-355-NFL1, 355-6351. You can also interact with us via Twitter. You can tweet to myself or to John. Here's how you do it. Cole Pepper, John Osher.
Yep.
Very creative and sneaky the way we did that. And also on Facebook, facebook.com/JacksonvilleJaguars. You could be driving a brand new Kia Optima by registering to Win Cons Kia. Stop by Southside Kia or Kia of Orange Park for your chance to win. They had it out of the game Sunday. Has a mustache on the front of the car. That's how you know it's Cons Kia.
Ah.
See that? By the way, of course, the Jaguars play the Colts on Sunday, 1 o'clock. We'll have coverage beginning at 10 o'clock with the Sunday's Real Pit Barbecue Tailgate Show. And then the following week, Jaguars are back home September 30th to take on the Cincinnati Bengals. And that is not only the day that Fred Taylor will be inducted into the Pride of the Jaguars. It's going to be a great moment. Free Fred posters for the first 50,000 who show up here at Everbank Field. It's also sort of the start of kind of his alumni day,
mm-hmm.
Kind of homecoming of sorts for the Jaguars. Jaguars greats from the past will be there as well. They're doing this all around the NFL where teams are picking a day, picking a game to come in and, you know, do a bring back all their guys, whether they're doing Rings of Honor or celebrating a particular milestone or whatever else. So that's going to be a nice moment, I think, to see a lot of the old guys. I say old, most of them are
sure.
About our age,
yeah.
Who are coming back.
Or younger.
Yeah, the old guys who are in their mid-30s coming back for that game. So that is on Sunday, a week from Sunday, as Cincinnati comes to town.
An interesting note, too, it so happens this week, Edgerrin James is going into the Colts Ring of Honor. Next week, you know, Jaguars will be there for that. Next week, far bigger to these fans, obviously, is that Fred Taylor goes in here. Two of the two guys who are pretty good friends,
yep.
Came from very close to one another around the same time out of South Florida. And, you know, both are two of the better guys you ever want to meet. Fred's, obviously everybody here knows, is as class an act as, you know, what this franchise has ever seen. So I'm looking forward to that day on against the Bengals.
Yeah, should be fun. All right, let's, before we get to some of your calls and tweets at 800-355-NFL1, let's get to the general manager, Gene Smith, on what you don't know from Sunday's game that maybe it might help.
Well, how well Brian Anger punted. I think people do know that he has a live leg and he hit a few punts in the game, but when you look at a 42.8 net plus three inside the 20, I think that's the thing that he has done very well through the whole preseason is putting the ball inside the 20, practice and games.
Yeah, three of them inside the 20. That was actually an easy one to pick. You know, one of the few guys who really obviously played well. There was one punt that didn't have the kind of hang time.
Yeah.
But, again, you average over 50 yards a punt, you're doing something right.
Yeah, unfortunately, I'm not sure where else there was to go on that one.
Yeah,
on Sunday.
Not, yeah.
I mean, I'm not making light of it, yeah. But it was a tough showing all around, and Brian did punt well.
There may be one.
And Mike said the whole
go.
Special teams, mm-hmm, you right. know, played well. So, you know, good for them.
All right, let's get some tweets in here. Here's one from Eric who says, why so few carries for Maurice Jones-Drew in the game? That's an easy one. They didn't have very many plays. They only ran 38 plays, didn't pick up enough third downs, and 12 carries. It wasn't that they were light in terms of the run game, I think statistically. They just didn't have enough plays.
Yeah,
they were behind.
That's a fourth of the plays, and I think that is probably about where he'll be most of the season. And when you have nine first downs, and it's hard to get the running back going, and it's hard to have very much consistency.
Yeah.
And that's, I think they'd have liked to have used him more, and they'd also liked to have had a lot more yards.
Here's one from Eddie. If our pass rush is so bad, why not kick some tires on somebody like Andre Carter?
Well, first of all, let's clarify the pass rush. It has not been great. I don't think Joe Cullen or any of the defensive linemen would sell you on that. But the pass rush issues, I think, start a lot more with the inability to stop the run so far. This team's 31st against the run, and it's very difficult to get sacks if you're rushing on, if the other team's in a lot of third and two, third and three situations. And the Jaguars have actually had some pressure early in games, but there weren't a whole lot of passes in situations where you expect to get a lot of sacks. This team must stop the run better than it has, or nothing will work on defense.
Well, and the other thing we've seen in the first two games that I suspect we'll continue to see until the Jaguars, can find a way to do something about it, and part of that is because of the inability to stop the run consistently so far, the short passing game from both the Vikings and from the Texans. I mean, Matt, I don't know if Matt Schaub looked downfield more than a couple of times all game, and when he did, he didn't bother to throw it. So,
well, again, my sense is that's on the linebackers.
Mm-hmm.
Much like not stopping the run is on the linebackers. If you're able to throw short and that works and you're able to run, as you were alluding to, there's very little chance of getting a pass rush when the teams are able to effectively do the things they have designed to prevent you from getting in third and long situations as a defense.
Here's Mary with one. Was it me or was Blaine Gabbert rushing through the game? I didn't really see that. There were times where he was rushed to throw the football. But I will say, again, the problems that cropped up on offense with the passing game were not Gabbert chucking and ducking. So if you want to take some positive, I don't think that was the thing. He got hurt at some point in the first half, not exactly sure when. I don't think we pinned that down yet when that happened, and tried to kind of gut it out. And I wonder how much that had an impact on what they could do, because, one of the options they could have done, they didn't do a lot of rollouts with him. He's a guy who is very athletic. He ran – I think something in the high, maybe in the 4.6s or something, or 4.5s in the at the combine. So we know he can move. It just didn't happen.
I guess I'm not exactly sure what rushing through the game means. And I'm not being snide with the question. I'm not quite sure what it means. If it means was he rushing through reads and not trying to get rid of the ball in a hurry, I think he was having to get rid of the ball in a hurry. I think some of the options in the passing game were to throw to the side, and it didn't look like there was a whole lot open downfield, which I guess could lead to the perception of rushing through the game. And, by the end of the game, when it was 27-7 and the Texans were running a lot, I was kind of hoping they'd rush through the game.
There is that, too.
I mean,
You weren't alone, I don't think, of that. All right, you can connect with us via the phones at 355-NFL1. You can tweet it, or you can get it to us via the Jaguars Facebook page, facebook.com/JacksonvilleJaguars.
Yeah, and this one right off of Facebook, guys. By the way, all of our questions, tweets, or Facebook questions brought to you by our friends at CopyFax. Should we have not seen more balls thrown to Justin Blackmon?
Well, I mean, again, I didn't watch Justin play-by-play the entire game, but on some of the throws that I saw Blaine try to make to Justin, it did not appear that Justin was open. And I think the entire receiving core, I'm not going to hang this all on Justin, the entire receiving core has to do a better job of getting open when they have a chance to make plays on the ball, make plays. I think Justin a little bit is going through the adjustment that rookie wide receivers make, adjustment to the speed of the game, adjustment to what he's seeing out there. It's a different game in the regular season than it is the preseason. But I don't see Justin running as wide open as you did at times in the preseason. So I'm not sure it was that easy to force to him. I think they tried some in the second quarter to get that going. And when it didn't work, you start running out of drive opportunities to do that.
Well, again, they just didn't run that many plays. They didn't convert, and they never converted on third down. So that's a big problem, too. All right. More comments when we come back at both Facebook.com/JacksonvilleJaguars, on Twitter at Culpepper or at John Osier, and on the phone lines at 355-NFL1, 355-6351. We'll also get you an injury update, and we'll hear from the head coach, Mike Mularkey. What did he say about the game last night on The Mike Mularkey Show? Visit Sonny's today. Try the new barbecue baskets, the slow-smoked pulled and sliced meats basket for $7.99, or for just a little more, choose between two other mouth-watering baskets, Sonny's. First name in barbecue. We'll be back with more Jaguars Reporters presented by Burger King right after this timeout here on Jaguars Radio. Welcome back. Jaguars Reporters presented by Burger King. Culpepper, John Osher here. Jaguars get set to travel to Indy to take on Andrew Luck and the Colts on Sunday. 1 o'clock kickoff, 10 o'clock our coverage starting. Let's give you an injury update brought to you by Baptist Health. Depend on us for life. All right, Gabbert's got the upper
glute.
Back leg.
The glute.
You got a butt problem. A rumpus. I want to see how he's listed on the injury report when it comes out. Is it going to say leg? Is it going to say... Because, you know, there are some code words sometimes in the course of...
No, if my experience is correct, and amazingly enough, the last year I covered the Colts, Peyton Manning had a... Gluteal is what they listed as.
You think with that specific?
And it draws less snickers than butt.
It does. So. That is true. Cam Bradfield, I'm thinking this week is not probably the week he's going to be back.
I'm not going to say no because Mike didn't say no yesterday, but it didn't sound like he'll be back.
Rashad Jennings might be back.
Sounds like Rashad and a couple other guys that you're about to list.
Derek Cox, maybe.
He sounds like he's got the best chance of those three, and the three include Britton. He's got a chance.
So you're saying there's a chance.
Yeah.
And then Daryl Smith, probably not this week.
Mike indicated yesterday it's not this week. And I've heard nothing to support this, but I get the idea that Daryl is a little longer than a week.
I think there's a chance we may be looking at after the bye week for Daryl Smith.
Yeah.
And if that's the case, then
you got to play better.
And listen, this stretch of games up to the bye week is important.
Sure.
I mean,
they're all important right now. You're 0-2.
They are, but you know, if you come out of here 2-3,
yeah,
I think you'd feel okay about where things are going, particularly considering that would mean you would win two of the next three.
Sure.
And that you would have a win over either, you know, Cincinnati or the Bears or both mixed into that equation. And Joe was asking about, is it a must win? You know, quite honestly, the must-win thing here, too, for a lot of it is for those fans who are on the fence.
Sure.
You know, how things go early on a lot of time dictates what happens later in the season. And from that standpoint, these next three games coming up here before the bye are vitally important.
Right. Anybody in football will tell you, within this organization, they still see good things. They see big picture. They like the way things are getting put together. And history tells you that sometimes when you're doing that, there are hiccups, and there are ugly hiccups like you saw Sunday. But they also believe that there's something on the back end. But just as many people in football will tell you, you cannot expect the fans to see the big picture like that. So just as you say, in order for people to buy into this, you must win. That's just the nature of the beast.
All right, 355-NFL-1, 1-800-355-6351. Last night, Mike Mularkey, on the Mike Mularkey Show, had this to say about some of the issues with the Jaguars against the Texans on Sunday.
That was a huge momentum change.
It sure was.
I don't know if people realize how big a play that was, because I think everybody in the stands thought they're coming back. And
right.
The bench certainly felt that way, but that penalty was critical.
All right, that's talking about the penalty on Andre Branch.
Right.
My feeling on that penalty, where he was, by the way, was very close. You may or may not have actually been offside.
It was iffy.
Tough to say. But regardless, the impact that had, I think it's possible the Jaguars, they would have gotten the ball back because it would have been fourth down. They would have punted it. If the Jaguars go down and score, now all of a sudden it's 17-10,
right.
And you're feeling like you're in a little better position, or rather, mm-hmm. It would be 17-14, wouldn't it, if they
sure.
go down and score a touchdown?
Well,
so now all of a sudden, anyway, it would be a one-score game, and now you're punting away. Here's the problem, though. I don't think that one play made it impossible, made it so they weren't going to stop the Texans again.
Right.
And that was, they sort of fits and starts, and momentum can change how things
sure.
go. I just don't think the Jaguars are going to beat the Texans one way or another in that game. I mean, I think the Texans were playing too well, and I think they're too talented.
That play was, it was too bad that play happened, because Maurice Jones-Drew had talked to them at halftime in the locker room, and he had said, look, when you get a chance to make a play, you got to make the play. You got to make the block. You got to make the reception. And when they came out in the second half, it was pretty clear that for about – I'm not sure what the time on Andre's penalty was, but until that, you had seen a different team. You had seen a team with energy. You had seen a team that made some plays above the X's and O's. LaRon Robinson's catch was a really good mm-hmm. catch. Blaine looked like he had some energy. Pozelesny was really playing, and that seemed to be inspiring the defense. You would have liked to have at least seen them be able to maintain that sort of energy for 6, 10, 15 more minutes to show themselves what it can be when they get that sort of performance and when they're making those kind of plays. They would have at least maybe carried over and showed some signs. I mean, with a young team that's trying to learn itself, which this is, those sorts of stretches can be built upon, and you would have liked to have seen them had a little more time to build upon that. That said, the defense, that penalty came deep in Jaguars territory, or deep in Texans territory. The defense had plenty of opportunities to stop them after that penalty.
You don't mind if I make a bigger picture question here?
Whatever you want to do, Cole.
Well, I know how much you love getting into the details of the loss over and over again after spending 2 days answering emails on it. But despite that, one of the questions is, with Gabbert in particular, will we have an answer on Gabbert by the end of this year, do you believe?
Well,
either yay or nay.
I'm never sure what answer, again, I know people say, people want to hear, is he the guy or not? If by the end of the season you've seen steady improvement, if you feel like in December he's significantly better than he was in September, if you feel like I think you will have it. Minimum, you'll have the answer. Can this keep building? Is this going to be worth it? I think you'll have that answer. Now, will we know how good? Will we know, I don't know that you know that by the end of the year, but I think by the end of the year, if he's healthy for 13 games, you should have that, at least that feeling that you would have with a normal rookie quarterback who's played that many games.
Yeah, again, if this was his rookie season or his first year as a starter, which is what was intended when he was drafted initially, you'd see the first two games, it wouldn't. Again, you're not happy with it, but you saw
right.
good game, bad game. That's not all that unexpected from
right.
a 22-year-old quarterback. All right, we'll take timeout. When we come back, we fill a hole in the ozone with a question that didn't quite make it on the cut of the ozone on Jaguars.com, but we'll get it right here. Cha-ching, here we go. More Jaguars Reporters presented by Burger King when we come back right here on Jaguars Radio. Welcome back. Jaguars Reporters presented by Burger King. Cole Pepper, John Osher here. You need a truck that works for you even when you're not working. The 2012 Silverado is the most dependable, longest-lasting, full-size pickup truck that fits your lifestyle. See your Southern Chevy dealer today. Proud sponsors of the Jacksonville Jaguars. Again, Jaguars at the Colts this week. Then the following week, back home to take on the Cincinnati Bengals, A.J. Green and company. and that will be the day that Fred Taylor is enshrined into the pride of the Jaguars. And I will still tell you, John, you were talking about Fred and Edger and James being classy guys,
sure,
with similar,
yeah,
background. One of my favorite memories of my broadcasting career, that I hope is not over right now, is Joe says maybe, it was the year, was 2008, was it, take the back, 2007.
Yeah, for a favorite memory, you,
like I said, I
remember almost nothing about it.
Well, I don't remember the year. It was the year Fred went over 10,000 yards. I think it was 2007. Was
07.
It? 07. And they went to the
November.
Right, in Nashville. So 2007, and I would do a pregame interview with Fred every week. And so I was kind of along the ride. And that was the year that Fred kind of became, you know, the mayor of Jacksonville.
Mm-hmm.
Finally, he took a lot of punishment early on from fans about the injury, you know, playing with injuries and so forth. Some of it was his fault. A lot of it was not. And so that was the year I think everybody embraced Fred's 10,000 yards. Jaguars are, you know,
sure,
being the Cinderella team. And it was great to kind of be along that ride with him for a little bit, interviewing him every week before the game. All right, let's hear from the general manager, Gene Smith, as he names his Scouts Eye Unsung Player of the Week.
Antoine Blake, he really has done a nice job, not only as a gunner on the punt team, but also on punt return as a vice, you know, holding up the opposing gunner, and also on kickoff coverage.
Antoine Blake, undrafted rookie, and he's done very well, really, since the first preseason game on special teams. That's been something he's really excelled at.
Yeah, speedy guy, and obviously he's done well. I mean, no question.
There was so the ringing endorsement.
No, I mean he's Gene said it best. He's a guy you don't notice a whole lot because, yep, he's on special teams. He's an undrafted rookie.
That's why he's the unsung.
But he's played, yep, he's played very well and has played well from the start.
That's why you get the unsung tag. All right, time to patch a hole in the ozone. Jody and Fort Pierce. What's with the defense was on the field for 80 plays excuse? If anyone was tired, it should have been Houston punching themselves out. I mean, how exhausted they must have been. Come on, man. Just shut up and play.
Yeah, and I didn't get the feeling. Sometimes when things get written, fans take it as, oh, this team's offering an excuse. Well, I didn't hear the players bringing that up on their own. It was a topic with the media that, you know, we were asking them about it, and they were talking about it. You know, again, the one thing this team did not do at all, I didn't think the other day, was make excuses. They knew they played bad. Mm-hmm. To a man, the talk was about recovering, refocusing. And Terrence Knight, I think, said it best when he said, you know, we trained in this all summer. If it's 80 plays, it's 80 plays. We got to go play in it. So, again, it definitely hurts to be on the field that long. It's not easy to play defense when you've been being run on. But it's the defense's responsibility to get off the field.
Yeah, it's also the offense's responsibility to convert some third downs,
sure,
and keep them off. Again, it doesn't happen very often in college football that there's 83 offensive plays run against you, and it certainly doesn't happen very often in the National Football League. I mean, again, no, that was a whipping. Jaguars got whipped on both sides of the football.
Yeah,
and so now the big question is, will it happen again? And, you know, you sit here and look at this team, and you see the record, you know, 0-2, one close loss, one not close loss, and you wonder – again, kind of back to the question of which team is this.
Mm-hmm.
Again, I don't believe that this is a team that is in the situation. I mean, there are six winless teams in the NFL right now. Jaguars, Titans, Browns, Raiders, Chiefs, and Saints. Some of them are pretty mm-hmm. big surprises. Saints have a lot more talent, but they've had all kinds of issues, of course, with the bounty gate stuff. Chiefs are a little bit of a surprise to be 0-2. Raiders may be a little bit of a surprise to be 0-2 with that,
right,
you know, some of the talent they have. Browns probably not a huge surprise with all the rookies they're relying on. Titans, maybe not a huge surprise, but
played San Diego and New England.
They played a tough schedule.
And
they've got, you know, they've had a quarterback injured. So, you know, this is all part of this. And so the whole point about when will you really know on Gabbert kind of comes into play. But this is still an existing question. It's out there. But the Jaguars have to have some level of expectation that they play more like they do, more like they do against Minnesota. And if they play like they did against Minnesota against Indianapolis, you know, you'd think they'd have a shot and maybe flat out win.
Well, again, the Texans are very good, and they are also very good against the areas where the Jaguars were weak last week. They're very good defensive line getting to the quarterback, and they're a very good downhill cutback running team, which would stand to reason that plays well against a team with beat-up linebackers. All that said, you can't lose 411 yards to 117 yards. That's not acceptable. But I don't think you'll see necessarily a matchup worse than that in the next few weeks for the Jaguars, which sometimes when you get a matchup like that, it snowballs a little bit. You're down 17-0 at half before you know it. If they could have gotten back in it right then, who knows what happens in the second half. But I think that was a very bad matchup that caused things to snowball a little bit more than it might have.
I think we can also say we can see that at this point, early in the season, we've seen, again, the preseason against Baltimore and now in this game, those elite teams,
yeah.
The Jaguars aren't an elite team right now.
Right.
The question is, where are they truly, and what will they be like as the season goes on? Because I don't think it's a static thing, particularly when you're talking about having a new staff.
No, it's not a static thing at all. And the one thing that I didn't realize before I started covering the league is how much teams can improve or get worse during the season. And it can be real improvement in a lot of areas.
Ask the New York Giants.
Again, I've said since day one, I thought this offense would have growing pains and ups and downs, especially in the first six or seven games. That was what happened in Buffalo in Mike Mularkey's first year coaching there. They came on strong at the end of the season once those guys figured out all the intricacies of the offense. That's what you're hoping happens for this offense.
I want to take a moment here as we near the end of the program and point out a couple of things in the National Football League. Kellen Winslow signed with the Patriots mm-hmm. because the Patriots clearly need, you know, a
sure.
few more tight ends.
Right.
Winslow at one point was, you know, going to be a difference maker at that position, going to revolutionize
sure.
that position. Never really did. He's had a couple of good years, but has never really been a major difference maker. The other bit of news in the NFL, Steve Sable of NFL Films passed
yeah.
away at the age of 69. Obviously a major player in terms of the way the game was presented to and a lot of – listen, I still – old football Follies tape that
right.
I got when I was a kid was one of the early memories I have of seeing some of those things in the National Football League.
If you're our age, certainly, you can still remember a time when it was rare to see NFL on TV. You know, for the days of ESPN, even when ESPN was first starting, you didn't see you were not saturated with it the way you are now. In that time, NFL Films and the way they packaged the game and made it dramatic and exciting and brought you close to it was revolutionary, and it made a lot of people feel about the league the way they feel about it, me included. And so certainly his genius will live forever in this league and in people who follow this league.
Yeah, it's one thing, talk about being able to leave a lasting impression
sure.
beyond your mortal time, and that's what's happened. And Steve Sable, brain tumor
yeah.
at the age of 69.
Shame, too young.
Yep. All right, again, Sunday, Jaguars and Colts, 1 o'clock for kickoff, 10 o'clock for the Sunday's Real Pit Barbecue Tailgate Show. Tomorrow night at 6 o'clock, John and Brian Sexton and Tony Baselli and Jeff Loggeman live from 6 until 8. Jaguars this week presented by Aetna at Latitude 30 on location. And you can meet Joe Fortunato.
Thanks for having me, Cole.
Thanks for being at, John. All right, that'll do it for John Osher. For Joe Fortunato, Cole Pepper saying thanks for listening to Jaguars Reporters presented by Burger King. And good night from Jaguar Central.